Janie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio. Hi, and welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show. I'm Janie Lee Grace. I'm going to be covering today on this show something that I'm not sure I've covered before, at least on its own, and that is the fabulous topic of retreats. Now, I'm sure that if you're listening to a station like UK Health Radio, you'll know all about retreats. You'll have experienced some. But it is incredible how over the years it's changed so much, hasn't it, really? I think back to when I wrote my first book. Some of you may have heard me say that my first book was written 20 years ago. I'm literally celebrating 20 years since Imperfectly Natural Women came out and was an Amazon number one bestseller. And back then, retreats were kind of few and far between. There were a few really rustic ones where, you know, you really had to slum it. And then a few really, really expensive ones that only seldom people could actually afford to go to. Although I did way back then go on a few juice retreats, which were absolutely amazing with Jason Vale. Still does incredible, incredible retreats. Go and do one of Jason's retreats if you get a chance. But the other retreats that I did back then were very much, I remember I did one in a sort of spiritual center and another one in a monastery. And that was kind of the vibe way back then. Seems hard to imagine now, doesn't it? Because retreats are everywhere and there are so many different types. And that's why I really wanted to chat to my guest today, Caroline, who is literally the queen of retreats and has a new book out. So I really hope you're going to enjoy this conversation. Just before we get into that, I just wanted to share something else with you that's been sort of on my mind recently. And that is about this whole idea of how we step into a whole new identity when we quit the booze. So as you know, I'm, you know, queen of holistic living, but also in recent years have quit alcohol and have really seen that it was the missing piece. You know, I was doing all of the pieces. I was eating well. I was, absolutely taking care of myself. I was using natural and organic skincare. I was cleaning my home without chemicals. I was going off and doing retreats, but I was literally stepping around this elephant in the room that was alcohol for so many years. And since quitting 8.5 years ago, I'm sure you've heard me say many times that my only regret is not doing this sooner. But I also work as a coach, of course, and train people to be sober coaches. And over the last few years, one thing that I've really noticed with clients is they will sometimes say to me, you know, I'm doing okay. I'm enjoying not drinking. I'm not missing alcohol, but I just don't know what to do with myself when I go out and meet friends, or, you know, I've got a party coming up and I just don't know how to be. And I really get that, because I absolutely remember what it felt like at the beginning when you're kind of raw and exposed, if you know what I'm trying to say. It's a very odd thing when you've been a drinker for years. It's almost as though you have that persona. You often wear that identity of the party girl or the, the raver. And when that's taken away, you're sort of exposed, and there can be a sort of period of time where you're just really not quite sure who you are. It's really fascinating. It's as if you have to become comfortable in your own skin all over again, so that you can literally step into this new identity that's waiting there for you. But it can be tough to do that. You have to kind of reflect on knowing that you're okay just as you are. And that can be really tough at the beginning, because you just got to trust the process. You know, you're someone who now doesn't just accept a drink just because somebody leans over and says, "Ah, don't be boring, have your usual." The answer is going to be, "I'm great, thanks. I'd love a alcohol-free beer or a glass of sparkling water or whatever." But it comes with practice. And to start with, it can just be quite tricky to really step into this new identity. And one of the tips that I sometimes give people is is literally to sort of visualize yourself, do that future pacing thing that we absolutely know that athletes do, right? They visualize themselves beating their own time or whatever. And you can do this. You can visualize yourself in exactly the persona you want to rock up, you know, for the party, the wedding, the whatever it is. Visualize yourself as that sort of confident, sober person who knows exactly who they are, and then play that role. If that doesn't sound too ridiculous, literally play the role of someone who is the confident, sassy, sober hero. It does work. It's definitely worth a try. But either way around, do just recognize that this can take some time. So if you're early days of quitting alcohol and you are finding it really tough, remember it gets easier. And this whole identity shift thing, it does come. It does come in time. And I can absolutely assure you, I've never met anyone who preferred themselves drinking. You know, most people, when they have properly quit, when they've literally embrace their new sober life, they can't imagine ever going back to how they used to be. I had one client recently who had gone back to drinking. She'd relapsed and she absolutely hated the fact that that had happened. She could see quite clearly there was zero benefits from drinking, literally zero benefits. There is nothing to gain and nothing at all to gain from drinking. So, you know, really just focus on everything you really are gaining by quitting alcohol and just be open to stepping into this new version of you. You know, the version of you that does take care of yourself and does want to go on retreats and want to do great things for your health and well-being. Step into that version of who you really are. Check out my Substack post, which I wrote all about stepping into your new identity as well. For those of you who have quit the booze and you have, you know, you've been thinking, I wonder if there's a new purpose there for me, then do check out my Sober Coach trainings. We're booking now for our June training. We start with a couple of days in person, and then we have 5 weeks online. And if you can't get to the UK, then you can do the whole thing online. Lots of people have. And literally within, from start to finish, within 7 weeks, you could be up and running as a sober coach, working with grey area drinkers. It's really important to stress that the training is for you to equip you to be able to work with people who are drinking more than they want to. It's not to equip you to work with those who are clinically dependent, but the hugely growing number of sober curious people or people who are ready to quit and now focus on living their best life without alcohol. That's what we do. It's incredibly rewarding. Check it out if you've been thinking about it, because we've got a free webinar on April the 9th. It'd be great to have you as part of that. If you go to thesoberclub.com and click on events, you'll see the icon there for the webinar and you can register. Or if you prefer, just get in touch with me. You can find me on anywhere on social media at Janie Lee Grace, and we can have a chat and we can see if it's right for you. For absolutely everyone, talking about that events page, thesoberclub.com/events. We have such a great event happening on Wednesday, the 1st of April. It's the wonderful Catherine Gray. I'm going to be in conversation with Catherine live from Hello Love in Bloomsbury, which is a funky little studio and non-toxic cancer charity. It's such a nice place. And we're going to be kicking off at 6:30 p.m. You can get your tickets from thesoberclub.com. And I'm going to be chatting to Catherine about, well, everything, actually. I'm sure many of you know Catherine Gray from The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober, the other books in the Unexpected Joy of series, also her fantastic novel, and now her brand new book, Little Addictions. And she's the most fantastic speaker and writer. She's very entertaining. We normally have quite a laugh when we get together. And of course, it will be a small number of people. So you'll get chance to meet Catherine. You'll get chance to ask questions and probably have a photograph as well, if you like. We're going to be supported by Naughty AF. So you'll have a lovely glass of sparkling wine if you'd like some, alcohol-free, of course. And really, it's just an excuse to be among like-minded people. Just come if you can, because There's something really magical about connection. And I hope you won't feel fearful. I've often said on my podcast that I felt ever so fearful the first time I went to an event that was with a bunch of sober people. I don't know what I was expecting, but I was very nervous. But of course, it was absolutely fine because, you know, people who are sober are actually just lovely. And so we will absolutely make you feel welcome. So if you come on your own, that's completely fine, but you're welcome to bring friends as well. So grab your tickets, go to thesoberclub.com/events. It's Wednesday, the 1st of April, 6:30 p.m. in London, and I'll look forward to seeing you there.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Well, my guest is Caroline Silger, who has spent years making the time for something quieter. We're talking retreats. Caroline is the queen of retreats, also a published poet. And this book, How to Retreat, it just looks lovely. I just love the book. Welcome, Caroline. It's lovely to chat to you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, Janie.
Yeah, it's such an interesting idea. I mean, I've been a fan of retreats for years and years and years, probably from before it became tremendously fashionable. I think literally many, many years ago, I went on sort of small retreats. And then around 20 years ago, just after I'd written my very first book, where I was definitely ahead of my time, I spoke a lot, but I had a whole chapter on retreats in that book. And then Fantastic. I did a few juice retreats and a few well-being retreats. And so I'm sort of well versed in it all. And I've run lots of retreats, but I've never really thought of it in the way that you're talking about it in this book. So I really like the fact that you're kind of unpacking it all, but you've also got this kind of thread running through it that perhaps going on a retreat doesn't have to cost a fortune and doesn't mean taking a fortnight off work. It can be something that we integrate into our life. So was that the idea behind it? How did it come about for you? Tell us a bit about your background.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like you, Janie, I've been doing retreats and writing about them for many years now, over 30 years. I did write two books before, Body and Soul Escapes, compendiums of actual retreats before the internet hit off, of places that you might go to in the UK and worldwide. So I've always had a passion for and an interest in retreating. But it occurred to me that lots of people say to me, oh, I can't afford it, or I haven't got the time, etc. And I just feel very much that the principles of retreating are there to be claimed by everyone. So I wanted to reclaim retreating as something that anyone could do. Mm. You didn't have to be into yoga or a meditation or own a shawl or wear stretchy clothing or have a massive budget. Mm. Not that you have to have a massive budget to actually go on a retreat. There are many, many wonderful, affordable retreats across the world. But I wanted to reclaim it, especially now, for everyone so that they could just take what they needed in their own space or in a space of their choosing if they wanted to. I do in the book also, I do talk about the types of actual retreats available should you want to take your journey further and go on a hosted proper retreat. But mainly the book is for people who want to retreat in their own space and how to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, let's just unpack the word retreat, but then it's like, oh, retreat from, you can have a sort of slightly negative context. It's an interesting word, isn't it? Tell us a bit about what you know, about the principles, about what it actually means.
Yeah, sure. It's a Latin word. It comes from, actually originally in Latin, but comes from the old concept of the word retreat comes from the French retraite, which means to draw back. It the actual principle and the practice stems is thousands and thousands of years old, probably has a spiritual origin with the ascetics kind of escaping into the forest in India to commune with their gods, whoever they were. And over time, it's just grown and changed as a religious practice and then slowly being claimed by, it was the Catholics really whose lay people began to retreat for themselves. But obviously, putting that aside, and I'm an atheist, I'm not religious, there's always been people in society who have wanted to draw back and retreat and escape and step away from. And I do think it is a human instinct anyway. You know, that feeling that you have where you just think, okay, there's too much going on, I've got to stop. That instinct is retreating.
Yeah.
So it's pulling on that. It's exciting that. It's like everyone. You don't have to be a particular type of person to do it.
Yeah.
If you're just a little bit stressed or overwhelmed, or you want to make a decision and you can't, or you're jaded or exhausted, or you just want to spend some time with someone you love, these are all reasons to retreat.
Yeah.
So it's a joyful act.
Yeah, I get that. And I feel like there's never been a better time to be thinking about this, because so many people are literally overloaded. And then when you bring in the whole digital space, you know, actually retreating and having a digital detox is a fantastic idea as well. And lots of people. And it would be, you know, practically impossible for many people to do that in their own space. So actually going away to do something like that is amazing. I remember years ago when I was writing my books, I used to have to retreat one way or another because I just simply couldn't get it done at home. You know, I had four kids, I was busy. I had to kind of take off to give myself space. And actually, I remember back to some of the retreats I did when I was writing, particularly, I could not believe how much time I had. It's like time stretches massively when you've not got all your own chores and all your stuff to do and the phone ringing and somebody needing you and the memories of the stuff you haven't done. You're away. You can't do anything else. You've got to just focus on yourself and whatever it is. And time just stretched. It was incredible. I was so unbelievably productive on those trips.
But you know what, Janie? This is what I'm trying to say in the book as well, is like, it's wonderful if you can go away and be nurtured in that sense. But if you can't, it is possible.
We're going to get onto that. Don't worry. For sure, I'm going to get onto that bit because you're absolutely right. Not everyone can get away. And wouldn't it be great if we can bring some in? So I'm definitely going to get onto that. I just wanted to share with you that a close friend of mine has literally just gone on a silent retreat.
Yeah.
Now, that
my favorite.
Really? Oh, I can't think of anything worse. I think I would just pop. Give me 12 hours would be enough for me. I'm not speaking. I would literally pop. And I think she's doing 14 days. Like, seriously.
Do you know what, Janie? I would say to you in that situation, with that reaction that you've just had,
I should go.
I would say that's probably the main thing you should do.
That's exactly right.
What we're challenged with most, what we feel resistant to most, is often the thing that will give us the most benefit.
They always say, don't they, if you feel like you can't meditate for an hour, meditate for two.
Right.
I love that. Yes. And, you know, and certainly for people in the kind of community that I run, some of the retreats that I've hosted over the last few years, you know, self-care and sobriety was one, a few ultimate sort of self-care retreats. It has been brilliant for people who would not otherwise be taking care of themselves. Literally, they've forgotten how to take care of themselves. They've actually forgotten.
Yes.
So for them to sort of have that reminder and be alongside other people has been really magical. And they've been able to kind of really kickstart their sobriety journey or their self-care or whatever it is. But then you always get the question, which again, we'll come on to, but you always get the question of, oh, well, you know, it was great while I was there in that nurturing environment, but how the hell do I bring it home? So, which brings us on beautifully to your stuff.
Yes.
Tell us then, what's the kind of, what are your tips? How do we make space to be able to bring any of this stuff into our daily life or into our home?
So it can be in your home. It can be a space of your own choosing. So it could be a friend's house. It could be a room that you know you have access to. You could hire a humble cabin, a self-catering. It's up to you what space you create. But in the book, I talk about, so I have it 8 sections, and within each section, you can retreat for an hour, a day, or longer. So an hour is literally that. So you have to do a little bit of prep. But actually, even if you're at work, you could decide, okay, it's a sunny day. I'm going to go and sit on a bench in the park, and I'm going to do one of these practices that resonate with me. And I might just honor that space by placing something important to me by my side or something from nature, or I just might put some essential oil on my pulse points, or I might just take a breath. The best way of creating a space for yourself is just to turn your phone off, right? Yeah. Whether you've got an hour or a day, you'd be... As you've just said, the power that comes from turning this off and resisting it entirely for an hour or a day is so huge in this day and age.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you're retreating for longer, I would always say turn the phone off. But obviously, that's not always manageable. So I do include tips on how to manage your screen use and your screen time in a controlled way so that it's about quietening down, Janie. It's about being able to listen to yourself and where you're at. And you can't do that with loads of noise around you. It's about trying to still all of that noise so that you can then still what's within you.
Yeah.
So back to your question. I do believe that like simple principles, simple things and a little bit of preparation goes a long way. And like, you know, with a day, for example, an hour is easy, okay? And you just choose what resonates with you and you give it a go. You're starting small. With a day, it's just turning your day off into something more meaningful. It's just a little bit more preparation, a little bit more pre-thought, and you're still taking your lovely day off, but it's turning it into something more powerful and meaningful because you're choosing with intention to attend to something that you need to in your life. Rather than just, I'm going to take a day off, I'm going to sleep in, go for a walk, whatever, meet a friend. This time it's like, okay, I'm coming to this with intention. That's the key, intention. And with that, a lot of things can unfold.
Yeah. What's your thinking around sort of certain rituals, you know, whether that is candles that you light or having the right space? How do you feel about that? Is it important?
Yeah. I mean, look, it's I know that it's not for everyone. You choose what resonates with you. In my book, I suggest certain things. So I always suggest you set an intention for your retreat. You know, that might be something really simple, which is today I'm going to allow myself to rest. It could be really, really simple. I also suggest that you have a morning ritual and an evening ritual, which just helps you land, arrive where you are with focus, and then end your and close your practice with focus. I suggest ways you can do this. But I also say that as you start doing this yourself, you'll find your own little rituals. A morning ritual can be as very simple as making your bed with care. An evening ritual could be very simple, listening to a really nourishing piece of music you love with focus. So yeah, rituals, I think, help you anchor your retreat, especially if you're doing a self-devised retreat. They just help you calm down, anchor, and focus. I also suggest a little pattern to your day. I always suggest you need at least 30 minutes rest and 30 minutes movement. And whatever that means to you. Again, we're in a very busy, stressy world. So when I say movement, I'm not talking about I must go for my run or I must do my weights or I must do this, I must do that. It's taking all the shits away. So it's giving yourself space and time just to move gently and process what you're going through on your retreat, and also then rest. And you could be resting in the morning rather than moving if you're tired. You're listening and tuning into your body more.
Mm. And what about if you do want to focus on a retreat with a group of friends or family? What about their energy? How do you manage sure. that? Obviously, if you're on a retreat and a host is managing it, that's yes. different. But if it's a bunch of you together, how do you set the tone?
Absolutely. So I say in the book that the best way to retreat on your own is on your own, solo, 100%. That is without saying. But there are certain retreat practices in here which are actually wonderful and fun to do with a trusted friend, a trusted partner, or a conscious teen. There's also a few practices that you might like to invite children into if you want to as part of your retreat. I do also talk about how to create space if you are in a busy household, if you are in a busy family, how to negotiate with your partner, how to set up the structure of your day so it works and so you can get respite and peace. But in terms of your question, there are certain lovely things you could do. For example, art therapy. I talk about how you would probably start that off on your own, but that if you enjoy it and it's fun, you could then organize an afternoon with a friend and do it together, and what you might talk about afterwards. I think you if you do retreat with someone else, you have to talk about that with them, lay out the ground rules, as it
yeah,
were.
Yeah, have a few boundaries in place. Otherwise, it just turns into gossip.
Totally. And still give each other that quiet space yeah. as well. Mm. I do think, particularly with our day and age, teenagers, there are certain practices in here. I have a teenage daughter that they would love. And dare I say, even the unplugging section, the digital detox, which is probably what they need most of all, there are certain practices you could do with your parent, which is that we're actually really lovely and connecting, help you connect with your teen and help them switch off in a really lovely kind of engaging way. Also things like declutter. A lot of teenagers like to do those practices as well. I'm trying to also broaden the themes of retreating. What you think might be a retreat is here, but there are other practices in here, like planning, as I just said, decluttering.
Well, just let me pause you for a second there then, just before, sure. and pause you on that one, because I have got a mountain of decluttering to do. Seriously, it's a big deal at the moment for me.
Right.
And I don't find it easy. I find it incredibly difficult. I must have all kinds of old associations and stuff. I know it's a block, and I've really honestly tried to work on it so many times.
Hey, you should use my book, Jenny.
I was just about to say, I hadn't read the section on turning the concept of decluttering into some kind of retreat. So tell me how I can do that.
Absolutely. So that is in the, so you can retreat by season, and decluttering is obviously, in fact, now March and April lends itself to the chapter that's in is purge.
Right.
And again, you don't have to do that now. You could do it in December if you want to. All of these practices can be done whenever you want. It's retreat for longer. It's a 3-day retreat, but you could start small and just do a short one day, or you could make it longer if you want. And it's just helping you start with a small space. For example, it could be your desk, Joni, or a bedside table. I wouldn't tackle something like a wardrobe. Mm. It could be a kitchen cupboard. It could be something really small. You start small, that I give you the basic principles. And it teaches you how to organize, how to plan, how to split up your stuff. Do I love this? Do I need this? Do I love this? Yes, keep. Do I need this? 100% keep. All the other stuff, which is probably 3/4 of the stuff that most of us have, let go. And it's teaching you how to do that, how to make a ritual of it and make a day of it, a pleasant day of it. And how to put back your stuff, what to do, clean it, organize it. And then what to do with all the stuff that you can't let go of. And as you say yourself, Joni, a lot of this is emotional. Mm. You know, we're attached to something, we don't know why. you often then put that stuff away, you store it away somewhere clean and tidy, and you revisit it in 3 months' time and how to do that. So it's just talking you through the practices and the principles, really.
So I suppose, I mean, obviously there's loads of information out there about decluttering and how you look at your space, but it's what you're saying. You can get by just setting intention around it and being perhaps a bit more mindful of that emotional impact. We could literally think of that. I could think of that for myself as a decluttering retreat, which might actually be the key for me.
Yes. And then in the book, there's a thing called the Retreat Toolkit, which you can see it's black spined in the copy. So you can always find it in the book. And that Retreat Toolkit is what you use on all the retreats you choose, whether it's an hour, a day or longer. So you can think, okay, I absolutely need to start decluttering. I'm going to arrange my own retreat. It's going to just be one day. I'm going to use the toolkit. I'm going to pre-plan a little, very, very light schedule. I'm going to follow Caroline's ideas, but then I'm going to make it my own because this is very much a book for individuals. There's no rules. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm suggesting things that have worked for me and others. And also, you know, I'm a retreat consultant and I create retreats myself. So I've kind of put some suggestions in there, but I'm encouraging people, I hope, to also bring their own stuff to bear. Yeah. So you may find, Joni, in the course of your personal declutter retreat, okay, actually, what I actually need to do before I declutter this wardrobe is attend to my own stuff going on in my head. So I'm going to choose another retreat first, and I might do that first. I might do some nurturing of myself, and then I'll come back to it. So it's that. So it's very much a book that you can dip in and out of, according to your personal need throughout your life.
Mm. Yeah, I love that.
The station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at a special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
The station that makes you feel good.
I mean, I think that there's no doubt about it. This isn't just sort of fluff, is it? I mean, there is so much evidence around our emotional state, our sense of overwhelm, the chronic stress. It's linked to so much actual illness and anxiety and I suppose what I'm trying to say is for anyone kind of thinking, oh, the word retreat, that just means, if you've got lots of money and you've got time to do something luxurious. Actually, it's kind of an essential, really, if we want to take care of our health and well-being, isn't it?
I think so. And I do talk about all the way through the culture, the history, and also the science. There's a lot of practices that have their basis in neuroscience, how when we start changing our behavior and the way we think, we literally change how we behave and our physiology. So I do talk about that. I think it is serious. I am very much a cynic myself, and I am kind of anti-woo-woo. I want to know that this thing's going to work. So I deliberately chose practices and things that have worked for me, and I've hopefully explained them well and explained why they work and how they work with a little bit of reasoning and science behind it. So that, yes, exactly, the people who think, well, you know what, I don't really want to do that, try it. Try little bits and pieces yourself, and you'll see that a lot of the results for retreating, there's proven results, but also there's a magic which only you can feel when you're actually doing it or when you've done it. And that's the joy of it.
I get that completely. And for you, you know, having visited and hosted retreats, you know, for years, what's your favorite, you know, firstly, and also what have you observed that people seem most hungry for?
Yeah, interesting question. So my favorite retreats, I'm not lying here, they literally change as I change. So, you know, I write poetry. I love writing retreats. And at the moment, I absolutely love private retreats where I can just be alone. When I've had a busy time, that's what I gravitate towards.
Yeah.
But actually, some of the most powerful experiences have been, a bit like I said to you earlier, the ones I'm most resistant to. And often that's a group experience. I have found with many, many people, when they want to gravitate towards going on a yoga retreat with a friend and, you know, being able to have a glass of wine, what they actually realize when they do that is that what they really needed is to actually go on a more intense retreat, no alcohol, and somewhere where they could just lose their backstory. You know, I'm Caroline. I'm not this person who's a mother, a daughter, whatever I am. I'm just Caroline in this moment. And you meet people as they are. And you can communicate, I find, with strangers. And I talk about this in the book, in the Kindness Retreat. You can communicate sometimes with strangers in a much more powerful way than you might share with even your closest friend. Because if you share with your closest friend or your family, you've just put all that stuff out there or onto them. Sometimes you need to share with people who don't know you in a nurtured environment. And a lot of amazing transformation and change can happen, and you feel massively connected in that group. And I talk in here about the Kindness Retreat that you can yourself establish, and you can intentionally go out there and think, today I'm going to talk to a stranger. I'm going to eat or just smile at a stranger, not in a weird way, but just like, I'm going to show this person that I can see their humanity and I'm going to connect with them.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's what we need, especially if we're lonely or depressed. Sometimes just going out and having an exchange with another human and having the courage to do that can be incredibly powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me a little bit more about your poetry. I mean, literally, tell me. I don't know anything. So tell me about that, because I know it's kind of a thread through the book.
Yeah. So I've always written poetry. That's always been my way of retreating. I am a published poet. I really rate poetry as an art form. And it's not for everyone, but I do believe there's a poem for everyone out there. There's some beautiful, accessible, brilliant poetry out there. There's also some very dense in intellectual poetry out there. And I do believe you can find what you need. I think retreating suits poetry reading, because often really powerful poems are easy to read. They're easy to relate to. They're small and short. You can read them in bed in the morning or the evening. So I'm very drawn to poetry in all sorts of ways. I do write it. I'm very glad that my publisher suggested that we include it in here. I have just explained all the way through that sometimes during my retreating practices, a poem has emerged. I do believe that all of us have access to our own creativity, and that retreating can help spark that. It may not emerge as poetry. It might emerge as art, or the way you plan a party, or the way you make a decision. Creativity is an important thread through my book, and I've just revealed some of my poems to show what's come up for me. And some of those poems have been written on a retreat or about a retreat or part of a retreat experience. So it just felt appropriate to pop them in. But they're there if you want to read them. They're at the back. You don't have to read them if you don't want to. But yeah, I love poetry. It's close to my heart, and I, you know, it's my solace. Writing it and reading it is my solace.
And would you include performing it, in inverted commas, you know, reading it in front of other people? Is that an important part of it?
Not for me. I'm not a performance poet. I'm very much a page poet, and right. It to be read on the page. I absolutely love performance poetry, but that's for, and I have read it and I can read it, but I feel it's a very different art form. I think performance poetry is very much more almost like it's theatre. And you can really hear the lyrics. There's certain page poetry, including mine, where you need to read it. And as you read it, you claim it for yourself. So I've put it out there. Like you might read, like I've written about one of my favorite pastimes, which is going in the sea, wild swimming, releasing all your negative energy into the sea. When you read that, you make it your own.
Yeah.
It's no longer mine anymore. You read it. Yeah.
That's fascinating. So if someone reads this book then and just sort of takes one shift perhaps in how they approach self-care and sort of focusing on setting intentions, what would you like them to take away?
Okay, two things to say. One, I just wanted to flip back to what you just asked. I have actually read my own audiobook of this, by the way.
Okay, so yeah, that's, listen to that this. Now that is a roast. I've done my audiobooks.
Yeah,
it was Man Alive, is that hard work?
You know what, it was, but I loved it.
Yeah, and I enjoyed doing it, but I just, it's like, how long does this
it's
take?
It's really intense. It's intense. So I do read my own poetry at the end. Anyways, that's the first thing. Secondly, I think if someone was listening to this and had not done any retreating and wanted to begin right now, this evening, I would say there's lots of different one-hour practices I would start with, but the one that's closest to my heart, that's easiest, I would say, just get into bed, close your eyes and think, what one thing am I really, really thankful for today? What happened that was great? It could just be the sun came out. It could be I really enjoyed my coffee, or I was really glad that my friend called me, or anything, an event, a person, experience, an object, anything, one thing, write that down. Tomorrow, think of two things, write that down, and the next day, and build up a gratitude list practice where every day you're thinking of just five things, that's it, five things that you're grateful for each and every day. And you will find, we'll see what happens. How does that affect your mindset? How does that feel about how you feel about your world, your life right now? My feeling is that it's very, very powerful. And my teenager does it as well now. So I would say if you wanted to start somewhere, I would start with that.
Great. Thanks so much, Caroline. Really appreciate it. How to retreat. I think I've just frozen. Am I there? Can you hear me still?
I can hear
good.
You. Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. I just literally the internet just decided to dip out. How to Retreat is out now. Do you want to give us a website or anything, Caroline, to find out more about you?
Absolutely. So How to Retreat is published by Penguin Random House, available in all good bookshops and online. And if you want to understand more about actual retreats, I also co-run a platform. The website is queenofretreats.com. Which is powered by the Global Retreat Company, which I co-run. And that is a trusted resource of honest reviews about retreats that we rate and trust.
Right.
So, yeah.
Love it. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Janie.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.